Listen to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is Thursday morning, and we have some good stuff on deck.
I know.
I'm excited. The Lutheran Witness March issue. Finally get to dig into it. And
there's a lot of good stuff in this one.
Yes. Today we get to talk about history.
Yay! I think this... Sorry, did I like max out the mix?
No, you're good.
History is on my list of favorite things. Just to add another thing, you know.
It is on your list of favorite things. This is because we talk about all of Sarah's favorite things here on the Coffee Hour.
It's secretly what we do on the Coffee
Hour. Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting the Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu. Hopefully by now you have gotten your copy of the March issue. Over halfway through the month.
It's almost time for April.
If you haven't picked it up and read through it, now is the time to pick it up because there are great articles in this issue. Mm-hmm. And the first one we're going to take a look at today is Life Among the Pagans from the Reverend Dr. Joel Ilowski. He's professor of historical theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Ilowski, thanks so much for joining us on the Coffee Hour.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you. Yeah.
We often think in our lives, because we're all focused on ourselves, mm-hmm. we often think we have many more challenges, particularly moral challenges today because of the advance of technology and media. But you present us with a nice challenge to that thought. Describe the society in which the early Christians lived.
I might also say that this is why I think everybody should be a student of history, okay? Just a little plug for my discipline. Because one of the things you realize is if you go back into the time when the Christians were just starting out, you had a society and culture that I like to say was, you know, almost in some ways even structured to tempt. And as I put this in my article, you know, and if not to tempt, then to kind of, what might you say, distract, and if not distract, then coarsen, desensitize. I mean, it's the kind of culture where, you know, sex is everywhere, even though a lot of the literature kind of talks about the high, lofty ideals. I mean, if you're talking about the average person in a Roman city, they're going to be confronted with those kinds of images. You, of course, also have a society that's very focused on the different games, you know, at the Colosseum. But I would say kind of revolving around all of this is kind of a culture that really inhabits a world of the gods. You know, everything kind of going to have reference to those gods, whether you're in the Colosseum, you know, starts out in the temples, of course, but there's even kind of what I would call a public culture that recognizes a common heritage that, or culture, shall we say, that people share, revolving around this religious aspect, but which expresses itself in any number of different ways as they live their lives. Fascinating kind of thing. I do see some, you know, parallels between what we have today, I suppose, which is kind of what the article's about, is we think, you know, a lot of the temptations we face are pretty much just for our own day and age, but I would say the temptations we face are universal, which Scripture itself understood. So I don't know if that just gives you a little idea, you know, that you've got people who are very much a part of the culture and yet trying to be not in the, you know, of the culture, shall we say.
Yeah, what does the Bible say? There's nothing new under the sun. I think so often we think that we come up with new ways to sin, but I'm not sure that really is a thing.
We're not creative enough.
No, that's right. You know, sin's about one of the oldest things around, right?
Yeah.
So almost.
Yep, they were humans then as we are, and they sinned just as much as we do now.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Thanks be to God for Jesus Christ. How did Christians live differently in that society, in that pagan society?
Well, you know, one of the things about that culture that I mentioned, it didn't take much commitment to participate. You know, let's say you're at the Roman Colosseum and they're honoring the gods. All you have to do is, like, pinch a little bit of incense to the emperor. Well, Christians actually called for a much higher kind of level of accountability and for participation. Let's say, for instance, if you were going to be going to church, you know, in the early period, you couldn't just show up at the door, you know, and hop on in. You had to pretty much have someone who was a sponsor. There were people who actually watched over the doors, you know, so that you couldn't just come in. I mean, being a Christian meant more than simply just going with the flow. You really had to make a commitment to that. And so, you know, Christians had what I use this term, the Disciplina Arcanum, a nice Latin term, but I mean it really meant the kind of the ancient discipline of being able to make your beliefs agree with you, what you do in your daily life. So, in fact, some Christians saw themselves almost as like these desert monks living in the city. You know, and so they would, you know, practice this kind of life that would care about purity, that would care about, abstinence from things they knew they were not to participate in. They might even do this crazy thing called fasting, where they might not even, eat for a while or not eat anything, substance in a meal, And these kinds of things, I think, probably stood out in the culture a bit. But probably more than anything else, it was their care for other people, that they showed that they really wanted to put their faith into practice.
Why was worship, Christian worship, a closed practice at that time?
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it? You want to pretty much welcome whoever you can, but I think that they kind of took Jesus' words, to heart when he said, you don't cast pearls before swine. I mean, some have thought that maybe they kept the religious services, the Christian worship services, private so that they wouldn't get persecuted. And there may be something to that because some people were always trying to guess what the Christians were doing behind those closed doors. You know, they thought they might be sacrificing their babies or drowning them, because of baptism, or you've heard the thing about cannibalism because they said they ate the flesh and drank the blood of their master, these kinds of things. But, the reason, I guess, for really behind the closed door, so to speak, was not casting pearls before swine, use Jesus' words, that they really felt these things were holy and were not meant for just anybody, but for those who were initiated into the faith. And they took Paul's words seriously about the Lord's Supper, that you would examine yourself before you eat of the bread and drink of the cup. So it wasn't just a free-for-all in that sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and something that you said is resonating in my head about them. The lifestyle is different, and maybe that's something that we can learn from the early Christians. It's I don't know. Maybe it is our society today. Maybe not. But we don't always feel free to live out our Christian identity in the rest of our week. We go to church on Sunday, and then the rest of the week we're at work. That's fascinating how part of the identity of these early Christians is that they did live so differently from the rest of the culture.
Yeah, that's true. They did. I mean, I have this quote in that article from the Epistle to Diognetus, where he says, we don't have our own cities or anything like that, and we do like to reflect the local cultures where we can. We live in Greek cities and barbarian cities, both that kind of thing. But I mean, he has this comment where he says, we marry like everyone else, we have children, but we don't expose our offspring, for instance. In other words, where it was common, if you didn't want an infant, you would just put him out on the mountain to die, kind of thing. Christians don't do that. And one of my favorite phrases is when he says, the Christians share their food, but not their wives. it's like, okay, we're willing to share, but only in the areas where we're supposed to. And these kinds of kind of marked by the fact of how they love one another, which in a culture where everybody's trying to survive or, get what they need, what they can, the Christians kind of stood out. I suppose it's the same way kind of today. We don't go off and live in separate communities or communes or anything like that. Well, some do, but, seek to be that leaven in culture that often perhaps is against what we're kind of doing. It is maybe even kind of strange, if not even sometimes unloving, right? We're considered as people who, if we love everybody, we should accept all practices. Well, we've got a lot in common with the early Christians, too. They understood that what we're doing is wrong. That's not always easy to do.
What are some other things that we can learn from the early Christians?
Well, I think, the fact of how they lived out kind of the two poles of life, I say, that I mentioned this as well, this idea of You've got Jesus when the rich young man asks him, "What must I do to be saved?" You know, and he tells him rules of Moses' law. You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. And to recognize the fact that springs out of that love, one of the, you know, that's the foundation. And that's why I think, you know, a lot of our Christian life really does spring from that worship life, that liturgical life we have. But then to recognize that, you know, that you're not done yet, you'll have to live that life out, not for salvation, mind you, but to live the life that God has given you in service to your neighbor. I mean, that's anyway, but it's also, you know, taught because of the importance of both. And just to also be, you know, confident in your faith, that if God called you to faith, you know, to recognize in those situations where you're going to be confronted with rather difficult choices. And, of course, there's another whole history of Christians having to even give up their very lives. It's wonderful to read those things because you recognize the power that faith can have in a person's life. And I say, you know, reading these early Christian stories, reading some of the letters and sermons that we have, just shows us how deep that love and that faith can be in a person's life, and that it does, you know, radiate to the world that way.
Well, you're just about out of time. If we are to read early church history, what's a good place to start in terms of reading early church history, Dr. Orlowski?
Oh, gosh. Well, it depends on what your interests are. You know, and I like, you know, there's applications to Incarnation.
Can you say that again?
He's a writer from the fourth century. The Athanasian Creed was named after him, even though he didn't write it. But, you know, he wrote this book called The Incarnation. And you can find this book even as a foreword by C.S. Lewis in some of the modern editions. And it's a great kind of text to kind of show you some of the theological ideas that are very practical as Athanasius kind of works through them. You know, it's a nice place to start because it'll seem very familiar to us and yet has much to teach us. You know, to be honest, I usually start students with the Apostolic Fathers. That's a group of church fathers who wrote right after the time of the New Testament. So you can kind of get a flavor for it. But some of those, you know, can be a little bit longer to read and things. So, you know, you might want to read something by Clement of Rome, his first epistle, right? That's not that long. It's maybe 40 pages or something like that. I could go on all day, I guess.
The Reverend Dr. Joel Orlowski, Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Seminary and author of Life Among the Pagans in the March issue of the Lutheran Witness. Thank you so much for being our guest on the Coffee Hour.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.